Barbara Barnett lives in Spartanburg, South Carolina, a town with lush parks and a regional history museum that boasts about its rich past of textile mills and railroads. But this Hallmark-worthy life was recently threatened when Barnett was diagnosed with cancer.
There's probably not many other bits of news you can receive that is more devastating than your physician saying that you have cancer. There's a lot going on. You're thinking about financial issues. You're thinking about your mortality. You're thinking about your kids. And that's a whole lot to have on your shoulders.
Barnett's had two rounds of chemotherapy since March of 2023. After the first few treatment sessions, she says the process became somewhat routine, even if it was still terrifying. But when she saw her doctor to schedule the next appointment, he wasn't able to give her a date. Instead, he had to break the news that Barnett's chemotherapy drugs were experiencing a shortage, and he'd have to cut her usual dose in half.
When they told me that, it was so hard for them and, of course, hard for me, and I was really stunned. And so what I did was I just got on the computer, and I started kind of bashing everyone from the senators to anybody that had anything to do with, you know, the shortage, and found out that apparently, I don't know, it's a generic drug and there's not much money to be made and all these kind of things I really didn't want to hear about. You know, I mean, I thought it was pretty irrelevant that people aren't making enough money on saving my life.
Though it began to affect Barnett during the summer of 2023, the shortage stemmed from a problem in 2022. A raw materials production facility in India failed a surprise FDA inspection toward the end of that year. They chose to shut down and fix their quality issues. As an unforeseen consequence, the American Cancer Society reports that it halted almost half of all cisplatin and methotrexate production for the U.S. Both are widely used cancer medications. Dr. Julie Graylow says we couldn't have known just how large the repercussions would be.
We did not understand, because we don't, you know, have access to who uses raw materials from where, et cetera. We didn't understand how much of the raw materials were supplying all of the manufacturers, essentially. So when one raw material plant got shut down, it impacted the four or five manufacturers, and all of a sudden, we're in short supply.
Graylow, the chief medical officer at the American Society of Clinical Oncology, says cancer drug shortages have been a problem for more than a decade. But when demand spiked for alternative options, we began to see a shortage for another chemotherapy drug called carboplatin as well.
They're chemotherapy drugs that are given by injection into the vein that treat lots of common cancers, including breast cancer, lung cancer, and colon cancer. And we've estimated that the shortage this past year could have affected up to 500,000 people in the United States.
Suddenly, doctors were having to choose between patients, who needed to stay on their current treatment plan, and who could hopefully afford to have their dose cut in half or changed altogether.
It's like I couldn't even really complain, because he said, we've got to share it with the other patients. And you're like, well, I can't complain about that, because I want everybody to be healthy. It was so hard for them to tell me this information. These nurses are just angels on earth, and it was so hard for them, because I guess they've been doing it all day or all week or whatever in terms of not giving the patients the needed medications, and that's just not in their wheelhouse to be able to deal with that. I don't know how you sit and look at someone and say, well, we can't give it to you, but we've got to give it to someone else.
The main question in all of this chaos is why? In our modern day of technology and innovation, what could possibly be causing such a devastating shortage? Graylow says it can be traced back to the economics of how these drugs are made.
So the drugs that go into shortage are not the expensive ones that are still on patent that you hear about for $10,000 to $20,000 a dose. These are the old drugs. They're generic and off patent. They are tried and true. And they, when the drug goes off patent, then manufacturers around the world can jump into the market, get approval, compete, drive the price down, drive it so low that, for example, U.S. manufacturers say, we can't make it for that low price. We're getting out of the market. We'll focus on other things.
Instead, manufacturers in countries like China and India step in.
They're making a very, very narrow margin. They might not invest as much in kind of the the manufacturing line and all. And so they're more vulnerable.
In oncology, most of our issues really derive from the supply side, that being that the supplies are very, very tight and there's little redundancy or resilience in those manufacturing chains. So any disruption whatsoever, whether that be from a natural disaster or from a plant shutting down for maintenance, economic reasons, quality reasons, et cetera, it really ripples through the whole supply chain.
That's Mark Fleury, a policy principal with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. He says that these shortage issues stem from the cheap prices that Grelo mentioned earlier.
Generics are designed to be low cost. The introduction of competition drives price down, and we want that. But we think in some of these cases, the prices may be driven down so low that manufacturers are exiting the market, or those that are staying in the market really have no extra margin to invest in facility upgrades or resilient manufacturing or even things like stockpiles. So I think long term, we think that the economic situation needs to change and there needs to be a sustainable market for generic sterile injectables that can reward resilient and redundant supplies. But as much as we've had concerns about high drug prices, the irony here is that in this particular sector, these generic sterile injectables, we may have gone too far the other direction and made it too low. These facilities just don't have any extra money to go over and above the bare minimum to keep these sites operational.
Grelo says various bills have recently been introduced before Congress that address the economic hurdles. Others focus on improving communication between manufacturers, the FDA, and medical providers when a shortage is occurring. Another proposal looks at increasing the FDA's visibility into the supply chain. But Fleury is skeptical that it will have a meaningful impact.
A lot of what we've charged FDA to do is what I would refer to as crisis management. By the time the FDA gets involved, it's because there's already an issue that's affecting patients, or they can see this wave, if you will, coming on the horizon that's going to affect patients shortly if they don't do something. But all of that is sort of crisis management. So they're responding to problems that exist. And better visibility helps them maybe see the crisis coming sooner or helps them address it a little bit better, but it doesn't affect the root cause of the crisis.
So while improving the tools they have could help, it still will always be focused on crisis management. Fleury says we have to look at the larger ecosystem instead of hyper-fixating on one aspect of the issue.
I mean, I've been working in this field for over a decade, and every couple of years, we're spending time on addressing drug shortages. And historically, it's always been about sort of cranking up the transparency and the ability to see things, but we've not addressed sort of the underlying root cause.
But long-term solutions take time to figure out, time that cancer patients affected by the shortage today don't have. So while Fleury thinks increasing the FDA's visibility is just a short-term fix, it may be the one that could quickly help patients.
These drugs are made with what we call active pharmaceutical ingredients, or API. So while FDA has visibility into the finished drug product, what you or I would buy at the pharmacy, they don't really have visibility to the raw ingredients which go into it. And sometimes we're seeing shortages of those raw ingredients which ripple through. And so that's an example of one place where I think visibility could be improved.
We need to be able to see the data of what manufacturers are getting their raw materials from where, et cetera, so we can better anticipate if we shut down one plant in India, how much of an impact that's going to have in the U.S.
In this case, that impact has been overwhelming.
First, you have all of the stress and fear created by a new cancer diagnosis, and then you get started on your chemotherapy and, you know, you get your first dose or two, maybe you've adjusted, figured out how to manage the side effects. And then all of a sudden you're told for your next dose, we don't have one of the drugs. We're going to have to change a plan. Just think of how much stress and fear that would cause.
When Barnett went in to get her half dose of chemo, she was told they were completely out of carboplatin. The doctor changed her treatment plan to only use one drug instead of the dual dosages. But Barnett was left worrying if this alteration would be less effective.
The disease is already overwhelming. I mean, I don't even read, you know, things on Google because of how hard it is to look at the statistics and all that stuff. And I just feel like I'm not going to be a statistic and I'm going to, you know, eat well and exercise and do the best I can. But when my healthcare system can't even give me what I need, that's the very least I should have to worry about.
Barnett was eventually able to continue with her original treatment plan, but the sigh of relief was short-lived. Who's to say this won't happen again? Despite the supply chain issues and economic obstacles, at the end of the day, these are real people with very serious diseases who rely on this medication to live. And now, people like Barnett have the added stress of wondering if their next appointment will end early, yet again, because they don't have enough drugs for everyone. You can find more information about Barbara Barnett, Mark Fleury, and Dr. Julie Graylow on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
Coming up next week on Radio Health Journal.
Suppose you had dementia, because I think it's a pretty likely outcome for a lot of us. What would happiness in that circumstance look like?
Reimagining how to live with dementia.
But first, suicide may be one of the most preventable deaths, but not all suicides can be prevented.
Not every person with thoughts of suicide shows us a sign. They might protect their loved ones and family from that. They might be showing someone else a sign, and it's quite possible there are no signs.
All that and more on Radio Health Journal.
I'm Greg Johnson, host of Radio Health Journal. If you enjoy listening to Radio Health Journal, you'll also like our sister show, Viewpoints, which covers a wide array of topics from education to history to the environment. Here's a preview of what they're covering this week on Viewpoints.
It's everything from not being able to read a newspaper article to not being able to understand a job instruction manual or a credit card agreement or a lease agreement.
The long-term effects of never learning how to properly read. Then,
what they're basically telling us as a speaker and a listener is, hold on, I need a lot of neural activation for this.
The deeper meaning behind our uhs and ums. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Listen to Viewpoints Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for joining us this week and every week as we break down the science stories you need to know. You can find all of our past segments and guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and X for daily content. And tune in next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.